listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Dempsey could be diving back to England. DC United continue to delve in the MLS off-season. And we get ready and set to talk all things La Liga, including Neymar and more problems with his transfer to Barcelona. Welcome to World Football Daily. I, of course, am Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. The big news today is that Clint Dempsey could be pulling Fulham out of their relegation battle in the MLS off-season as the Yank gets set to make a move back to London, back to his old club where he left with so much bitterness, to return for the off-season, as so many of these Major League Soccer players do, and join up with his old side and try and drag them kicking and screaming out of the Premier League problems that they face at this moment in time. We're going to get into a little bit more of that later on today. But do you think that Clint Dempsey is the man to pull Fulham out of this, considering the way that he left, the bad blood that there was between the two sides? Obviously, there's been plenty of change since Dempsey left and went to Tottenham a couple of years ago. Do you think that this can be a working relationship once again? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and the Facebook page as well. And do you think that actually that these Major League Soccer players in the off-season taking their time out to come to the UK, go off to countries elsewhere around Europe and play football is good or bad for them? Does it run them down at the start of the season? We saw LD take so long off at the beginning of this year, so long off he actually missed the start of the season with the LA Galaxy, but came back very refreshed. On other occasions when he's come back after his time at Everton, for instance, on loan, didn't look as sprightly at the start of the Major League Soccer season. So are these players going off to get a quick fix for a couple of months of Premier League football? Is it the right thing to do? Let us know. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com and at WFootballDaily on Twitter are the best places to get to us. We're going to get those straight into our first guest of the day here on World Football Daily. And I'm delighted to say he's pretty much just a football journalistic legend. He's written one of the greatest football books on Spanish football that most people have read, and of course he is a man who regularly gives us his very important time to chat about all things Spanish football. I've given him so many introductions over the time that we've probably just run out of them really at the moment, but joining us today here on World Football Daily, the legendary journalist that is Mr. Graham Hunter. Graham, a pleasure to have you back, mate. How are you doing today? Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. Delighted to be joined by our guest for today. I think I've said all I can say about him whenever we have him on the show, so I might just leave him himself to give his own introduction this time. Graham Hunter joining us here, just one of the top Spanish football journalists, not just of English speaking, but in the world in general. Graham, it's a pleasure to have you on the show once again, mate. How are you leading into the festive period?
Oh, baby, wow, it's kind of big-headed now after everything that you said. I mean, that's so nice. We should do this more often. It's very, very good for one's self-esteem.
Well, it's always nice. Consider it a Christmas present for World Football Daily.
Thank you. A nice ego boost
for you, my man. I hope you are well during the festive season, and I hope you're slightly a little more calmer and less surrounded in controversy than Neymar and Barcelona are at the moment in time. Plenty of talk about the sums of money that were agreed between Barca and Santos, and of course and the company NNN that owned Neymar and his father as well. Can you try and just break down into layman's terms for those of us that are maybe just hearing? We've heard rumours of this going on since like October, since the move initially took place. What's happening with this Neymar transfer and the problems?
Who are the corner men? That is a complicated question, so forgive me if I go slowly and if I answer in segments. But the first thing to make clear, and this is factual, is that within Spain, because of the crisis, there has been a concerted effort from the government and the financial departments to try and examine whether football has done its homework properly, has prepared all its jotters. So you're getting agents being investigated, you're getting image rights being questioned, you are currently having the part which President Sandro Rosell played in the move of Neymar from Santos to Barcelona examined. Let's put some stuff on the record. Sandro Rosell has said today in a long kind of Christmas address to the media here, look, it's absolutely fine. The government department has asked us to provide details of Neymar's contract. We're delighted to do so. So I think it's fair to put that on record. Mm-hmm. I think secondly, what I've been told since Neymar arrived is that Neymar's father was extremely adept, and that's not a euphemism, I mean by that, clever. When the last renegotiation with Santos arrived, he said, okay, we'll re-sign for you so that my son is a more expensive target when he's sold. But what I want to be able to negotiate is a one-year extension. I want you to cede some of the rights to the player, my son, to me, his father, so that when the player is sold, some of the extra money that you get because he's got a slightly longer contract comes to us. Now, there are many different versions of what third-party ownership means. There are many different versions of whether all football associations feel the same way about players being part-owned by investors or agents and part-owned by clubs. But so far as I know, internationally, there's nothing illegal about a father owning part of his son's registration. And as such, I certainly, from a journalistic point of view, not from a fan's point of view, I have no problem from the idea, which I have certainly been told from within Football Club Barcelona, that they paid part of the fee to buy Neymar to Santos and part of the fee to his father's company. Where I think we can simplify it a little bit is that there are allegations, which I certainly don't want to give substance to because I can't prove them. There are allegations that perhaps Sandro's age, status as a person of great influence and awareness within Nike, within Brazil, gave him certain advantages, and I think that he deserves every bit of what we all apply by law in journalism, which is innocent until proven guilty. And I think I probably want to leave it there, Oliver, because you know we're a law-abiding show. The case is being passed between Football Club Barcelona and the Spanish governmental authorities. And what needs to come out, hopefully will come out. But as we stand, I think that Neymar is correctly registered to Barcelona. I think he has proved to be an astute investment. And I hope that the club has been completely accurate and honest in how they've bought him and how they've registered him. How's that?
I was going to say, let's not go into anything kind of that may cause contempt of court or anything like that, Graham, as you wisely kind of paused there. But the question is that this isn't the first time that these kind of problems have surrounded this Neymar move. I mean, back when it first took place, Santos said they only received 9.3 million euros. Then in October, Santos said they only banked 25 million euros of this Neymar payment. I mean, it's not surprising, that at least, that we're seeing this sort of saga continue around this player when there are so many flexibility.
Well, wait a second. I think the first thing to say, again, sticking to good journalism, is that when you have a complicated deal that a young fella that the world wanted, who's about to go out of contract, who's leaving Santos a year earlier than ever we said he would do, who is part owned between the club and his representative, i.e. his father, then that is a complex deal that may lead to confusion. So I don't want to be involved in some sort of where the smoke was fire conversation, because I don't think that's what you mean either. If there has been slightly complex jigsaw deal. But I would also say that that's the way of modern football transfers. Perhaps, I mean, I wasn't reporting, perhaps when Ajax sold Johan Cruyff for $1 million to Barcelona, maybe it was equally complex. I've spoken at length to Josep Maria Mengele about transfer of Maradona from Boca Juniors to Barcelona, and I can tell you that was just as complicated, to the extent that the military junta in Argentina told them, well, if you're going to buy him and you're going to give the club the right amount of money, then that's all fine by us, but you ain't taking him before the World Cup's out of the way. We, the military junta, will not let him leave the country, therefore you'll have to wait, son. So Mingea did wait. Now, I cast out because maybe it's not 100% accurate to say that football transfers are getting increasingly complicated, but I believe that to be true, particularly financially, particularly in the way in which the many different ownership questions, the clauses which are introduced, the way in which money is transferred, financial rates of transactions. These things are things I would be glad not to be involved in. The football clubs and the general managers and the chief executives need to be involved in. I am not an investigative journalist in terms of contracts and money, and as such, when I see my limit, I try to stay there. And in this conversation, I've probably reached my limit in saying it's clear that Barcelona bought this player from two different sources, his agency, run by his father, and the club. That obviously makes it difficult. I'm not certain that any of them are obliged to report in public the transactions. If Football Club Barcelona don't want to make public, or indeed are concise with the truth in public about how much they paid or to whom they paid, they're only answerable to our members when there's an annual general meeting or there's an election. If Santos want to be circumspect with details or with the truth, the same applies to their presidential situation. And their president, I know, was very sensitive to re-election and wanted Neymar to be at the club and to renew his contract in a way which would influence the presidential elections positively at Santos, and they did so. Where my limit comes is in what Sandro Rosé said this morning, which was, we will hand the documents from the contract over to the Spanish authorities with pleasure. And therefore, what needs to come out, Ollie, will come out. And that's then into the hands of those who wish to scrutinise these documents. And at that stage, we can come back to the conversation. Right now, as far as I know, and as far as has been reported internationally, on that deal and that deal alone, I'm not yet convinced that there's a problem.
And we will keep our ears to the ground and make sure we pick up on any developments in that Neymar situation. Graham, let's talk about Atletico Madrid and their kind of preparations for what could be a very difficult January. Now, they've re-signed Adrián, and obviously big players like Koke and Diego Costa have put their names down for contract extensions. Is this Atletico's way of setting out their stall and saying, hey, look, hands off our prized possessions as we move into January, because this is a team that is still going very far at this moment in time?
Look, it obviously has that secondary effect, but I don't buy into that argument as a central idea. Central idea is that they're good players and they're winning trophies and they want to win more, so they re-sign them. The second central idea is that, and you and I have talked about this before, when they did the even more smart thing of renewing Diego Simeone's contract, because this is a man who took Atletico Madrid over when they looked bedraggled. when their squad wasn't as good, when it wasn't as fit, when they weren't working as hard, when they were 10th and 6 points off the relegation zone. And he's won 3 trophies, but beyond that, he's imbued them with a completely new working philosophy, day by day. A very cogent, very identifiable playing philosophy, and he's made them winners. So he is Atletico Madrid's Pep Guardiola. Ex-player, coming young, completely revolutionised how they think about football life, how they practice their skills, and where they think their limits are. So you renew him, and they did. And when he renewed, he said, listen, my desire is, my one demand is, apart from the extra $2 million a year, is give me continuity, give me balance. I don't want to be the type of coach for whom the tide goes in and out every summer, by which I mean 6 players loaned or sold out, 8 players loaned or sold in. He doesn't want that. So why the hell would he? So when you talk about the players they've renewed, number one, they've renewed talents. Number two, they have said to the players, never mind outside clubs, we value you. This is a solid project. We expect you to be together for years. Inevitably, one or two will be picked off. And the commanders are in debt. But right now, the greater revenue generator is not selling, it's progression in the Champions League, because they can undoubtedly end up 30 million euros ahead based on this campaign. And all the better if they don't win the trophy, because then you have to pay bonuses to the players, which can make it a Pyrrhic victory. So the reason they've renewed is talent, continuity, to keep the manager happy because of what he requested, and because he can keep these players. There's a possibility, underlying possibility, that they won one of the big 3 trophies again this season. Copa del Rey, La Liga, or Champions League. And as you said correctly, they have an extremely big January, including the home tie against Barcelona. Imminently coming up, they have, within the space of a handful of days, the Madrid derby, and their decisive tie against Milan, against a Milan side that they should defeat. It'll be a debut tie between these 2 sides in Europe. They've never met. And Atletico should begin the series with a win. That's a pretty heady position to be in.
Do you think there's a possibility that a side that maybe doesn't have the Champions League experience and the experience of being up at this level, this close, you know, right alongside Barca in terms of not only points but goal differences as well, that there could potentially be a crack as we get through into that January, February of pressure mounting on this side?
Obviously, you're right. Yeah, clearly it could be. That is what happens to teams that are green, that are young, that don't have long-term winning habits. I hope not. Clearly, Barca and Madrid fans will hope so. I hope not, because I'd like to see both the big clubs here tested to their absolute extreme. Given the way that not only they're playing this season, and I wrote for ESPN in August before a competitive ball was kicked, that although Diego Simeone will publicly say we're not championship contenders, they are. And he'll privately be telling his players, Madrid are in transition. Barcelona are in transition. We can win this. And it shows that I was right, because he's begun to talk about the title now. His players are playing as if they believe they can win the title. But you're right. It isn't simply about depth of squad. It isn't simply about talent, nor about consistency. There is an extra winning element whereby, one, there needs to be some luck in terms of suspension and injury and form. Mm-hmm. And two, there needs to be an absolute belief from players like, say, Adrian, or Leo Batistao, or even more crucially, Raul Garcia. The guys who will be number 13, 14, 15, 16 in the squad, Oliver Torres too. But when they're called upon, they feel like the key players around the Spain camp at tournaments do. Even if you're player number 17, if you're called on, you're not in the huff, you're physically ready, you're mentally ready, and you make a difference. You turn a game. That's the kind of thing that is the other side of the coin that you asked about when you said in the early spring, late winter, could they trip up? Clearly, the answer is yes. In terms of how Simeone will have the remainder of his squad prepared, I think they probably won't. I don't think mental fallibility is going to be the question. I think that he's so reliant on a core 11, 12 players that it's going to be back on Simeone. If nobody gets injured, it's going to be on him. How do you take the risks about when to say, I tell you what, irrespective of how important these 3 points are, I am going to rotate the team today because it's vital for the next 3-4 weeks. And secondly, how's your luck? Do you get the breaks? Do you avoid injury? Do you get the penalties? Do you get the flag up when somebody scores against you? The little breaks, including how do you react to a defeat? These are the things that will sort out the wheat from the chaff when you look at the two Madrid clubs and Barcelona.
It will be a very interesting winter period, an early start to 2014 for Atletico Madrid. Just finally, Graham, if we can have 2 last minutes with you, we'd greatly appreciate it. Just on the, we were talking about who was going to take over at Marseille as manager, and a name that popped up yesterday in our discussion was Marco Bielsa. Now, of course, he did wonders with Athletic Bilbao on such a, you know, restrictions that they have at the club. Is that experience, does that make him a kind of a front-running candidate for a job like Marseille, where there's obviously slightly more freedom for who he can go for, but still very tight restrictions financially on what he can deal with? Do you think that would line up well for a manager like Bielsa?
No. I think that Marseille, as a city, as a club, knowing the press corps there, the media, I think it would be a mismatch. I am one of those who's got extreme doubts about Bielsa's viability. I think if you put a magnifying glass on his Athletic Bilbao time, he certainly had his team playing convincingly, successfully. A lot of that, most successful season, they were very enjoyable to watch. But very nearly from the middle of that successful season, even from before eliminating Manchester United and Sporting Lisbon and going on to the UEFA Cup final and a couple of other final or Europa League final, the players were saying, help. Get him out or get us out. Our legs are falling off. We'll need to run through injuries. There's no grey areas with this guy. It's all very well about his eccentricities. And they respected him for his technical ability, for his depth of preparation, for his intensity of will to win. It was not wholly negative picture. But modern management at big clubs has become such a complex issue that you need to be multifaceted. I don't think Bielsa is. I think that you see his oddities and eccentricities played out very large in the media. And were I a chairman, I wouldn't hire him, personally. Not under any circumstances. But I can compare and contrast on the positive side. One of the reasons I think he was so successful with Chile, and I think he changed Chile's international team mentality, and he made them very difficult opponents, is that he's a far different manager to handle internationally when you play together 6 times across 8 months compared to day by day by day by day. So my point is, and I'll leave it there, if Marseille hire him, I have nothing against him, I wish him and them good luck. If I was in charge of Marseille at the Velodrome, I'd be looking elsewhere. Great. You'd get the job first.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm very good with football management simulations on the computer, mate. But I think put myself down in Marseille and with the intensity of those fans, and I think they'd be boycotting the stands once again if it was me, mate. We shall see. Graham, we appreciate you taking the time out today to have a chat with us. We always appreciate your time. And we look forward to catching up with you in 2014. But until then, mate, have a very nice Christmas and a very happy new year as well.
From Spain, from La Liga, Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, Graham. A pleasure as always. Graham Hunter joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Spanish football and giving us the rundown on Neymar, of course, on Atletico Madrid and their chances as we head into 2014. And a little bit on Bielsa there as well. Wanted to talk to him about the negativity as well that surrounds Real Madrid at the moment, as we were talking about that leading into their Copa del Rey clash in midweek this week, and obviously the discussions about their poor record in Germany against Schalke, but not to be, as we didn't get the time, means we'll just have to have Graham back before the Champions League fixtures come back to us in February to talk about it. Madrid did get past the Olympique in the Copa del Rey yesterday evening, and of course there's still a little bit more Copa del Rey action to come as well tonight. Valencia take on Gimnástica, Espanyol take on Real Jaén, Real Vallecano take on Real Valladolid, and Athletic Club Bilbao take on Celta Vigo. A little bit then of Copa del Rey action for you tonight. Big thanks there to the legend that is Graham Hunter for explaining to us exactly what's going on with this Neymar Barca situation. All very difficult indeed. I remember back on the show we were surprised though about the amount of money that Santos ended up actually receiving from this deal, and no surprise that something's kind of maybe gone awry, so to speak, with this move. Rafa, I mean, we spoke about this way back. Do you is it a surprise that there might be some kind of dodgy dealings going on, or some off table kind of stuff happening when it comes to these players that are owned by people and clubs, and Barca's kind of involvement in the transfer with Santos and with Neymar and his father and whatnot?
I was just gonna say, and when family and sometimes religion get involved, it just it's a whole sticky mess, Juice. But let's be honest, it's what's expected from South American football. If you ask me,
Italian football has match fixing scandals, and we can go to that week in, week out. And South American football's got dodgy under the counter dealings as well. I would, to be honest, South American football without the dodgy dealings and the drugs isn't South American football to me.
Right, I was just gonna say there's practically no South American football without that, because something's got to fund it, right? And
Why not?
That's probably a little bit below the belt.
World Football Daily do not support the idea of South American football being funded by drugs and illegal organizations of any sort. But it's par for the course, it seems, on occasions down in South America. And anybody who's seen the two Escobars will know about the histories of relationships of Colombian football, at least, with
And if you can prove us wrong, feel free. You know, I'm totally up for being proven wrong on that fact.
Let's shirk swiftly away from this dark hole that we seem to be digging ourselves in here into Raf, and let's talk about let's go to Major League Soccer once again. Actually, no. Before we do that, let's quickly explain what's taking place this Christmas, because you and I were sorting out the Christmas schedule, exactly what's going to happen, and we should probably at least inform people when we're actually going to be going off air at first for Christmas. Because as much as I love World Football Daily, Raf, I think us doing a Christmas show on Christmas Day would be kind of disastrous with the time zones. I mean, you'd be catching me as I'm starting my kind of mid-afternoon meal. I'd be catching you like first thing in the morning when you're trying to do like time with the kids and with the kid and the wife and the presents and all that good stuff. And I can't imagine it being a very kind of great show if we've got kind of presents being opened in one background and me kind of stuffing turkey down my face in background noise in the other. So I'm thinking we're not going to be doing a Christmas Day show this year.
Right? That's all right. If that's all right with you and if that's all right with the audience, I wouldn't mind a few days off. That's all.
So what the plan is here at World Football Daily is to we're going to be back tomorrow, of course, and on Monday as well, and be talking about the football coming up over the festive period. Then we will be taking a break on Christmas Eve. I have got my traditional annual Christmas Eve football match with all my friends from back home, which is always a pleasure to get into, and that takes pride and takes precedent over pretty much anything else that I do on Christmas Eve. Like, as long as I get to play that football game, nothing else really matters on Christmas Eve. Then we've obviously got the big day, Christmas Day, Boxing Day. I will be at Aston Villa against Crystal Palace, so not too much drinking for me on the Christmas Day. And we will come back on the 27th with a brief show wrapping up the Boxing Day fixtures and looking ahead to the games on the 28th and 29th in the English Premier League. Then on the 20 On the 30th, we will be back to look at the 28th and 29th fixtures and the news coming out of the Premier League from those games, and maybe a bit from around the rest of the globe as well. And then look ahead to the New Year's Day games. And then on the 2nd, we will be back with a look back at the New Year's Day games. And I think we'll be returning on the 5th, I believe it is. Raf, am I right saying Monday the 5th?
That is correct, Juice. And we'll be hitting the ground running, to say the least. Really excited to start the new year.
Because Raf will be refueled, because he's going to be kind of sat back, you know, just chilling. I'm going to be the one doing this work, Raf. You know,
I was just going to say, I'm pretty much taking almost 2 weeks off, which I seem to do this a lot, or not a lot, but when it happens, when it comes to kind of holidays and breaks, you seem to work through these and kind of help contribute throughout the break, while I just kind of sit back and say, oh, you need something on the site. Right. Yeah. Click. And then I'm going back to my turkey.
You know what? I'm kind of thinking, imagining off, if anybody's seen that old South Park episode where it's like World of Warcraft, and they show the guy who they're playing against in World of Warcraft, and he just sat slumped in a chair. He's this really fat guy. He's got like food all over his chest. He's just like got one hand on a mouse and one hand on his keyboard, and he's just sat there like, and just playing World of Warcraft. That is the look that I imagine you having round about Christmas time when it comes to doing World Football Daily stuff. If you just sat there slumped in the chair slightly, maybe a little merry. And of course, very well fed as well. Just sat there, just, just click on that. And that'll be post. Yeah, okay, there we go.
No, the holiday spirit will be with me, Juice. Definitely. It's already here. I'm here and excited, man.
You have your Christmas tree up?
Oh, are you kidding me, Juice? We had it up like 2 weekends ago, actually.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I had my lights up the weekend after, or the Sunday after Thanksgiving.
There is zero Christmas decoration in Casa del Juice right about now.
We're also prepping for a big New Year's Day party, man. So we're hosting a bunch of friends here on New Year's Eve, and we're kind of sprucing up the house. You know, it's a new house. It's kind of the first time we're showing off for some friends. So we're really excited to kind of to host a little get together. It's a New Year's party. We're gonna have a couple things to do around the house, places to go, to get your, you know, alcoholic beverages, of course, plenty of bubbly to celebrate the, you know, the occasion.
So I could Skype you when I get up on New Year's Day to go to work as you ring in the new year.
Yeah, absolutely, because I will be ringing in the new year.
So you'll still be up and boozing, yeah. And
it'll be one of the few occasions, Juice, that Raphael will be up around midnight as an adult, or in my recent adult years, because after having a kid, man, as soon as I'm out, man, as soon as I can drop down my daughter, I want to go to sleep too. And sometimes that's 8:30, 9 o'clock in the evening. And I'm serious. I'm spent. I like to get up early, because that's when I have my alone time, Juice, with a little bit of football research. I click on the television, you know, I catch up on my football news. You know, I get on my computer. I stand my boxers, just because that's a little bit strange. But this is my time here in the morning, and I definitely appreciate it, man.
To be the king of your household kind of things.
Yes, this is the king's time, if I may.
Well, we have, and also in the new year as well, by the way, hopefully, we're getting an exclusive chat with Aaron Johansson of AZ Alkmaar as well. The club have finally kind of said that we can hopefully get a very nice chat with him come the new year once they're out of training camp, kind of mid-January. So we'll be clinging on to that one, because I'm very much looking forward to having a chat with him. I've been chasing this guy down for like the last 2 weeks now, and hopefully we should be able to get a chat with him in 2014. New big guests coming to World Football Daily, my man. That's what it's all about. We do, of course, have to run through some of the main news from today. Raf, here on WFD. You know, we are winding down to Christmas, but football never stops, and there are changes left, right and centre, especially in Major League Soccer. Now, Jason Kreis is gone from RSL. His former assistant is now taking over, and the you know, it's very kind of Star Warsy. You know, the apprentice has now become the master kind of thing. As Jeff Cassar comes in to replace Jason Kreis as the head coach of RSL. Now, we spoke about RSL possibly needing a change, and it was actually Christ, it seemed, that wanted the change from RSL. You know, he stepped down as coach, and you know, it was all very mutual, really. But I get the feeling that Christ was the one that wanted to step away and go to New York City for 2015. With that being said, it's not like RSL are trying to break away from the Christ mold. I mean, Kassar's been obviously a long-term assistant to Christ at RSL. So I can't imagine his methods, his attitude to the way that RSL needs to be run is going to be too different to how Christ has run it. So do you think this will be enough? I mean, obviously, they got to the Major League Soccer final and lost on penalties. That's as close as you're going to come to winning the damn thing without winning it. You know, they were a kick away pretty much during that penalty shootout. However, we said maybe RSL do need to kind of change it up a bit, bring in a new attitude, philosophy, just to add that spark, because this is an RSL side that could easily have got, I mean, it could easily have beaten SKC, right? Then,
yeah,
of the two sides in that MLS Cup final,
sure,
RSL to me were the better side for, you know, 60% of that game. I thought SKC were obviously were entertaining throughout the season, and you know, I like SKC, but I thought RSL were the side that were going to go and win that game in regulation. And I just wonder, you know, if you want to try and change something slightly, kind of mix it up a bit, don't bring in the guy who's, we don't know. We don't know how Jeff Kassar's going to operate, but he could easily be just, you know, Jason Christ version 2.0 type thing. Or even like a step back, because, you know, it's like Christ's methodologies, but maybe he's not as good as a manager. You know, he's unproven at this moment in time. Do you think it's wise that RSL stick with somebody who's very much going to be from this Jason Christ mold at the club? Is it wise for them to have brought in somebody who has only ever been an assistant, never been a head coach at a club? I mean, this is a big Major League Soccer side, and if they can keep hold of the majority of this side and the top quality in this side and add to it, they should be able to make a run at an MLS Cup final appearance next season as well. So right. Is it wise to have brought in such an inexperienced guy for a head coaching position?
Right. A couple things for me that I find interesting about this subject. He came in as a goalkeeping coach originally for Real Salt Lake. Now, he's been the number one assistant coach, basically, you know, the head is the top assistant coach, if you will, at Real Salt Lake since 2011. You know, I'm sure he has a good idea of what's going on. The reason why I don't necessarily like it, I can understand it a little bit, and maybe it is, you know, the growth of MLS a little bit to be able to kind of grow from within or promote from within. But I do feel like they generally just kind of need something more to push them over the edge, not just kind of and that's not going to come with the stability of having somebody that is going to run the same kind of methods and or coaching style as the last coach. Rather, they need somebody who's going to add something more, bring something different to the mix and make it better. The one thing that really kind of frustrates me about this whole thing is that, again, I'm not sure if this is MLS growing or if this is just MLS recycling stuff, you know, like, so now they just kind of chopped and moved and, you know, regenerated. Is all that happens is what I see when I see Jason Christ going to, you know, another MLS club, staying in MLS, and then, you know, basically somebody from underneath him coming up and filling his spot. What I kind of wanted to talk to you, and I think I tweeted about it yesterday, was the whole kind of recycling of MLS managers, Juice. You see Klopas going to Montreal. You see all these people who've been in MLS filling the MLS positions. I think FC Dallas is one of nine teams that have, you know, fired their managers, Juice, and are looking to, you know, or have filled that position. And it doesn't seem like there's very many new names or new blood or new styles and techniques. I know a lot of people kind of complain about, well, look, you have to come into MLS and know the system. It's a crazy system. And it's totally different than everything else in the world. So listen, buddy, you just have to understand it.
Isn't that why you have chairman, director of football and all these other people around, a manager? You know, a manager obviously wants to bring in the players, make decisions and stuff. But at the end of the day, as we see in modern day football, the manager's role more and more is about what goes on the pitch, what happens in training, and dealing with that side of it. And the more you kind of have chairmen that get involved, you have these directors of football and these other people in positions around a football club, you know, knowing the system. Major League Soccer is still in its infancy as a league, I guess. So is there not this is just a hypothetical question, is there not an ability to kind of come in and change the system? You know, if somebody came in with a kind of radical new playing style for Major League Soccer, say somebody came in and tried to start passing it around like Swansea, you know, and did a Roberto Martinez, built it up from the kind of lowest levels in that club all the way up to the top side, a playing style of just passing it around in these beautiful little triangles that we see Swansea playing in. And in Major League Soccer, because there is so much parity between the teams in general, would that could be a place where the whole kind of methodology of Major League Soccer coaching goes completely out the window and something else comes in that completely changes it. That could be a game changer into it. So rather than, as you say, like rehashing these managers around the place, you know, just sticking a different team logo on the crest of their suit, why not say bring in, like, splash some money, bring in, say, Gianfranco Zola, who's just been let go by Watford. I'm sure he'd love an opportunity to come and manage.
Can I also interject a little bit? Like, I also feel like, and maybe this is reading or not reading enough into it, I don't know, but when they do kind of splash the cash and bring in some new blood, see under, like, your Ruud Gullit or your, what's his name, Juan Carlos Osorio, I believe. When these guys come in, you know, it's almost like they're stonewalled a little bit. Like you said, I understand if somebody doesn't get the MLS kind of methodology.
Well, trades, drafts, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's drafts, trades. Yeah. All that stuff, mate. Yeah. I understand if they don't get that. But like you said, there's people in place that should be able to communicate that to them. And if not, it's almost more of a fault on the business end than on the football end, because the business is ultimately affecting the football, and that just, it's strange in itself. But what I'm trying to say is that I almost feel like the MLS is, you know, as a culture, as a group of people, as a league, might be stonewalling these other outsiders when they come in. Because if you look at it's particularly Juan Carlos Osorio, I just saw this in the news the other day. He's like just got done winning his second like Colombian title or something like that with his, you know, club team down there. So it's not like he's a bad manager. You know, he's capable of reaching players and getting through to talent and putting.
So
it
is
together.
Is there a thing? Do you think I don't know how to phrase this, but Major League Soccer just favors U.S. personnel, because yeah. I mean, I think, and we've said, you know, it's much better to kind of bring through the young U.S. players than for to go off and kind of start buying all these golden oldies that demand right. So much more money and whatnot, because it's better for the U.S. game. And I can understand how it's better for the U.S. game that, you know, these U.S. coaches get their opportunities in Major League Soccer. But do you not also think that the fact that there's a lot of them are staying around in Major League Soccer, I wonder what it, you know, making that jump from Major League Soccer to European football, because again the systems are so different in terms of trades, drafts, and all that. I wonder if that actually hinders teams in Europe from ever thinking about bringing in a Major League Soccer manager, and actually if the setup of Major League Soccer kind of hinders these coaches and forces them to be rehashed around the place, because however successful you are in Major League Soccer, people will say you don't know how to deal with, you know, all these big transfer fees, all this kind of stuff, because you're used to trades, drafts, and all that, you know, trades, drafts, and automobiles type of thing, you know?
Sure. No, I mean, that's a point that I didn't really think of, but it makes a ton of sense. And that could, like you said, explain my kind of question of why we're not seeing, you know, MLS managers take up positions elsewhere. I think, you know, Bob Bradley going to Egypt was impressive. I would love to see, you know, even if they went down to Mexico, I think that'd be really impressive.
That's like, a national team coach, though, with Bob Bradley, isn't it? I mean, that's not dealing with the club level politics.
Kind of, yeah, I was referencing the Egypt job, just kind of, you know, going out there.
To have the goal to go off somewhere.
Right. But you just don't see that with American coaches. It's got to be, you know, a crazy, crazy step in an American coach's career, if you think about it, because you just can't name very many. I don't know any off the top of my head who have gone out and been successful managers at the top level of some club outside of the United States. And I think, man, that'd just be really, really cool, really kind of groundbreaking, really pathfinding, trailblazing. How many more kind of words can I think of to describe that? But I think that'd be really cool, man. And again, getting back to my point, I just wonder how much the recycling of talent and or using of kind of the same pool here in MLS might hinder it. And I wonder if there's any kind of pushback to potential coaches from the outside who are coming in.
It'd be interesting to know and like talk to some of the managers and some of the
something more for like Scott French potentially, you know.
He might
have a really good opinion on that.
We'll have to have a chat with Scott. I was having a chat with Scott French I think it was last weekend actually, when the college finals were on. And I've never seen college soccer before. It's the first time I'd ever seen it even being shown on English TV.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had it on ESPN over here. And it was weird because it seemed very kind of backwards compared to how Major League Soccer has been progressive and forwards in changing the game to become more kind of European soccer-wise. You know, they still have the downwards kicking, ticking clock, and, it's not added time or anything. It's, you know, you can count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, end of game, and all that kind of stuff.
Noticed in the general playing style, like whenever I watch college soccer here, it's so untalented and ungifted, and it's just it's weird because then you see the players off the field, and where there's some really talented players who I've seen play college and who I've met, and they have the talent, they have the skill and ability, but it's almost like the coaching is kind of dumbing them down to the coaching just isn't at the level it needs
maybe
to be.
You need that team chemistry as well, and obviously like there would be good players if they're in a team with a lot of poor players around them. It's very difficult for them to kind of shine because there's nobody for them to link with or anything like that. I mean, the quality it's not great, but I wasn't expecting, you know, anything great from it. It was just interesting to see how the game is kind of run and organized, that kind of rotating subs type thing and all that stuff. And it was just very peculiar indeed. I was having a chat with Scott about that and wondering if, you know, college soccer needs to change in the same way that MLS does, so it can kind of become a more improved kind of breeding ground for US soccer players. And we're having a discussion about that, so we'll try and chat with Scott French about that as well. Probably it will probably end up being after Christmas. If we can snag him in between Christmas and New Year, that'd be fantastic. Elsewhere in Major League Soccer, ref, before we dive too far away from it, another big pickup for DC United, who are rebuilding this offense, it seems. Fabian Espinola in the re-entry draft, former New York Red Bulls and Real Salt Lake striker, provisionally joining DC United. Of course, they've now got a week or two to offer him a full-on contract. Espinalda scored 9 goals in his last 2 seasons, 10 goals in the year before that. Only 28 years old as well. Another solid pickup for DC, who are kind of rebuilding, as I said, that offense that struggled so much last season. I mean, they're trying to make waves early on, aren't they, Raf?
They are, and on and off the field. I'm not sure if you've seen this either in the news yet, but DC United have been kind of progressing their stadium plans along pretty quickly as well. So, I mean, they are not just rebuilding on the field, but off as well, and that should be really impressive. I'm sort of rooting for them. I don't know why, but I think it's because, you know, they're one of the original teams. They're kind of like the OGs of the MLS. I want to see them succeed. And I just, Yeah, I expect them to. And the recent kind of you know, results or seasonal kind of performances have just, you know, left a lot to be desired for me.
The OGs of the MLS. Never has Major League Soccer sounded so gangster. Elsewhere as well, Dwayne De Rosario, formerly of DC United, had a very struggling season last year, has joined Toronto. The 36-year-old it will be playing in Toronto next season. This isn't a great pickup in my mind. I mean, you're taking away a guy who struggled for goals last year. And struggled to play well, coming off the back of a terrible year really for him, is heading back up to Toronto. I don't understand this. This isn't like a step forward for me, especially a 36-year-old as well. You need to look, if you're Toronto, if you're rebuilding that franchise, you want to be trying to bring through some of those kind of, you know, no later than 28, 29 years old, you know, getting players when they're at their peak or very young and can progress. It could be still a difference maker, though. You never know with Dwayne De Rosario. He's had a couple of cracking seasons recently, but should be playing up in Toronto next season. Tottenham, Raf, we can't not talk about AVB as that continues to swing around. He's been talking about the players that he didn't want to bring in, and
why is this? Oh, I mean, I just don't. I don't think I, like, you know, remember too many other managers who get let go, and then kind of stay around a little bit to linger and kind of.
I like it, man. The guy feels aggrieved.
Hey! Yeah, I enjoy it too because it's great kind of stuff to talk about. But I mean, do you remember any other kind of managers that do this? Is there another AVB?
Fergie came out and bitched in his book recently, didn't he? But no, that was more against the players rather than against the team. He's obviously United through and through. No, I don't know many managers that would do it, but you know, I'm sure Neil Warnock's done that before. I'm sure Ian Holloway's done it as well, some of the more outspoken managers. And why not AVB? You know, he's been doing the best job he could with a team that, quite frankly and quite obviously, he didn't want, and that he wasn't that much in control of the transfer policy of that side. Yet, because of the transfer policy of the club, he's been forced to lose his job. Why not? Yeah, sure, they gave you a $4 million payout, but why not go down kind of kicking and screaming a bit? His reputation in England isn't going to get much worse than this at this moment in time, especially with big clubs. He's going to have to, if he wants a big club, he's going to have to go somewhere else for work. So why not say, hey, look, this was something that I didn't even freaking want. You guys screwed the pooch on this. News is, though, after Tottenham's 2-1 loss last night in the League Cup, oh yeah, is it all AVB's fault? No, Tottenham. I think last night's result showed that. Tim Sherwood, no longer the front runner to take AVB's job on a permanent basis at Tottenham Hotspur. And the man who's gone 2-1, Bet Victor is saying 1-1. So pretty much guaranteed to take the job is Frank de Boer. Now, this would be a nice little touch. De Boer, obviously an iconic Dutch footballer, part of the de Boer brothers, of course, who, you know, I don't think you get many brothers that that are as good as that and come through at the same time in European football. Current Ajax manager knows how to deal with young players, might be able to kind of swoop away some of the young quality from that Ajax side. Obviously worked with Christian Eriksen at the club as well, and he is looking set, according to the bookies, to come into this side. Now, De Boer's been at Ajax since 2010. Ajax aren't the side they were when De Boer was playing there back in the 90s, for instance, when they won their last Champions League. But do you think, with the record that he's got, as you know, he's only been an assistant coach with the Netherlands and an Ajax youth team coach before this job in 2010. Do you think that De Boer has the kind of credentials for it? He's got 3 Eredivisie titles to his name as a manager, but
well, I mean, look,
he's not done it in Europe before, really. Right. I mean, he's not had the resources to do it, but he's not done it in Europe either.
I feel like the Eredivisie is a great training ground and a great proving ground for potential, you know, talented managers to go elsewhere.
In the same way that it's been good for players such as Altidore and others who have then joined the Premier League and not done well.
Oh, well, you know,
sorry, I didn't mean to.
Sort of, hey, I told you Altidore's, you know, success in Holland was primarily because of just he was built to succeed there. You know, he was a different kind of player. Just trust me, he was a different kind of player. That's why he succeeded there. He broke the mold. Anyways, what I'm trying to say is that it's a great kind of training ground and proving ground for him. Whether or not he can do it on the big stage or Premier League stage is, you know, it's different. It's possible. It's not to say that it's not possible. And to think that, you know, as a player himself, you know, I think he understands the game. I would like to think that it's something he can accomplish.
It'd be interesting to see what De Boer does as a Tottenham manager and dealing with that sort of intensity and that lack of control at a club as well would be very interesting to see. Tottenham is an odd place to go right now. It shows what money does in football on occasion. The other interesting bit of news, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer expected, according to the bookies again, and I'm only using the bookies because basically whenever the bookies kind of go on somebody, it ends up being right. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment is on some betting sites 1-1 to take the West Bromwich Albion job. Now, Solskjaer was linked with the Aston Villa job a while back. I think he was linked with the Wolves job at one point as well. Obviously, ex-United reserve team coach, ex-Manchester United legend, the super sub that was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Has been the manager of Molde since back in 2011. Now, do you think that... Solskjaer becomes, as a manager, who's very widely regarded as a very good tactician. And he's only been, you know, managing in Norway. Let's not beat around the bush. Molde aren't, you know, the be-all and end-all of world football or anything like that. But he comes highly rated as a tactician. And as well as being somebody that can deal with young players, as he showed in the United reserves. So... for West Brom to be able to pick him up, they've got a number of good young players. They need somebody who's as tactically astute as Hodgson was, because Hodgson, when he took on that side, very much changed things around and had a mediocre squad playing very good football. Obviously, I personally still feel sorry for Steve Clarke, for him getting the sack in the first place. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I'm surprised that Tottenham aren't thinking about bringing in Solskjaer themselves at the moment. He's only he's at 40-1 at the moment for the Tottenham job. But for West Brom, be a fantastic pickup for them. Really would be, I think, a quality manager to bring into the side. I mean, again, considering the reputation, what we do know about Solskjaer's kind of reputation, his record, he's obviously got two Norwegian titles to his name as a manager. This would be a pretty grand pickup for West Brom to have as their manager, this ex-United legend.
I mean, I really like Solskjaer primarily because of what he did on the pitch. He was somebody who, when he came on, was exciting, and it's he's been really interesting to follow in his kind of post career or post playing career, because he has kind of quietly built some success as a manager, and I think that for me, you'd like to think that a good player, a smart player, will be able to kind of use the players on the pitch as an extension of himself, kind of play the exciting brand of football that you experienced the managers playing as a player. And I'd like to just kind of, relive Solskjaer again in just another form. I'm not sure.
And he knows how to watch the game from the bench, because he was obviously the super sub. So he knows how to view it from that sort of range. And
you like to think that he can, spot weaknesses and take advantage of them as he used to do.
Now, would you not want a manager, your manager, being having the individual honor here of Knight of the Order of St. Olaf, first class? I mean, if that doesn't garner respect in the dressing room, I don't know what does, really. I don't know what does. Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, we don't want this guy. Oh, what? He scored a winner in the Champions League final? Who cares? Oh, no. Oh, he's a Knight of the Order of St. Olaf, first class. Oh, damn. Legend. Oh, damn. Hero. Sign him up. That's the news coming out of the Premier League today regarding the managerial crisis at Tottenham and West Bromwich Albion. Of course, Major League Soccer as well. We're running through all of the stuff with Graham Hunter out of La Liga at the moment. A big weekend of football coming up. We'll be looking ahead to that a little bit more in tomorrow's edition of World Football Daily. Also, wanted to cover a little bit more on the Clint Dempsey move to Fulham. We'll be looking at that maybe a little later on. Is Dempsey the right man to come back and save his old squad from relegation? We'll talk about that tomorrow. We've got IKTS coming up as well, and of course the build-up to the big weekends of games, the last weekends for the majority of the European leagues before their Christmas break, although some of us who have to follow Premier League football won't be getting a break at all. We'll be back at the same time on Friday. A big thanks to Graham for joining us. A big thanks to you guys as well. Remember, shout out worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483, and the Facebook page as well. And we will see you at the same time. Oh, and a big thanks to you as well, my man, Ref. I completely forgot about you there for a moment. I do apologize. We'll see you on Friday, guys, and we'll be back at the same time.